Greetings, everyone. This is Table Talk, your healthy theological radio addiction. And I'm your host, Pastor Brent Kuhlman. Hope you all had a great Christmas. I certainly did. And looking forward to the season of Epiphany. And that'll fly by. Boy, will that ever fly by. And then we'll be back to Lent and Easter. It's amazing how the season of the church year just flies by. When you're having fun, of course, it always just flies by. Pastors are always extremely busy during these seasons of the church year. They just seem to just go, 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 go. And that's what's so fun about it. Preaching Jesus as Savior of sinners. And that's just absolutely marvelous. Again, I serve Trinity Lutheran Church just north of Murdoch, Nebraska. That's in between Lincoln and Omaha. Stop by and see us sometime. Give us a shot, if you will. We preach the gospel categorically, unconditionally, audaciously, if you will. I'm going to get back to the flyby of Paul's pastoral epistles. The last time I did this, I got kind of in-depth. I was talking about the content of 1 Timothy, and instead of doing a flyby, I really got in-depth. But again, the first part of chapter 1, well, it's all of chapter 1 for that matter, verses 3 through 20, Paul takes up the matter, remember, the false teaching of the Gnostics, charges again Timothy to preach the gospel purely, reminds him about the purpose, one of the purposes of the law, which I spent a lot of time last time. We'll pick that up again when I do an in-depth. And again, remember, Paul says, you know, expresses his thanks to God, that God uses him as his instrument as a pastor in the church. Now, the next two chapters, I'm just going to do flyby, because if I don't do flyby, I'll get too far in depth and we won't progress very far. Progress, well, use that term, progressive. Woo, woo, that's loaded. I don't mean it in the political way. In the next two chapters in Paul's first letter to Timothy, so that would be chapters 2 and 3, Paul gives instruction about, you know, how you do things in the church. I mean, the modern terminology, of course, would be administration. But Paul gives things, directions, if you will, let's put it that way, about the divine service and the role of women in the divine service. In particular, that's chapter 2, verses 1 through 15. And again, the order of creation and the order of redemption, these things have a lot to do with Paul's directions here. He then talks about, you want to be a pastor in the church? And his word is bishop or an episcopus. All right, then there are qualifications, which is, you know, Paul's way of saying, you know, not all men can be a pastor. Not all men can be a pastor. There are certain requirements, if you will, or qualifications to be a pastor. And then he talks about qualifications to be deacons, chapter 3, verses 8 through 13. And then I suppose you could say at the end of chapter 3, there's a little personal word to Timothy. That's chapter 3, verses 14 to 16. Now in chapter 4 then, Paul goes back to the topic of the false teaching, the Gnosticism in chapter 4. He then talks about how we have a proper attitude towards various members in the church, namely the very old folks, as well as the young. Chapter 5, verses 1 through 2, talks about how we are to treat the widows in chapter 5, verses 3 to 16, and our elders, chapter 5, verses 17 to 25, and slaves, chapter 6, 1 through 2. And the remaining part then of chapter 6, verses 3 to 21, Paul once again returns to the topic of the false teachers, and he warns quite adamantly, and I suppose you could say it very particularly, against those who attempt to make a ton of money from religion. Does that sound familiar? That's America, by the way. I always tease my board of elders here at Trinity. Now, did you hear what I said? I said I tease. We have fun with this. I say, well, you know, if you want to fire me or if you want to starve me out, you know, I can always start to write prophecy books and then I'll be a millionaire. In fact, I might even be a billionaire because then I can start a syndicated radio show, I could start a syndicated TV show or internet program or some other kind of TV show, and I could sell prophecy books by the millions, and you know, you can charge if they're hardback, you can charge a lot of money, and people will buy, you know, all kinds of false teaching about prophecy, you know, about end time stuff. I've watched this happen over my lifetime. I mean, Hal Lindsey is just the classic example of how you become extremely wealthy by teaching false doctrine about the end times. Sorry about that, folks. What about Titus, right? Let's move to Titus. Why in the world did Paul write his letter to Titus? Well, I would contend that Paul's letter to Titus is really similar in occasion and content to 1 Timothy, and that's why I'm doing that next instead of Paul's second letter to Timothy. Remember that Paul had worked with Titus, do you remember where? On the island of Crete, as of course he had worked with Timothy at Ephesus. Now, you remember when Paul left Crete, who did he leave in charge as his representative? He left Titus in charge as his representative. As he did, you remember, we talked about this before in previous programs, just as Paul did with Timothy. Do you remember where? Yeah, that's right, Ephesus. Now, in each situation, whether it was in Ephesus or in Crete, the Christians were being troubled by, and this is always the case in the church, by false teaching and false teachers of the Gnostic variety. And if you don't remember what that is, go back to one of our previous programs here and you can review that. Now, in Crete, however, the teaching was more of a Jewish flavor than it was at Ephesus. And I just simply want to point out what I mean by that when I say that. I said that the Gnostic type in Crete was more Judaic or Hebrew, if you will. Can I say that? So go to Titus chapter 1. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about here. Titus chapter 1, and it's verse 14. To the pure all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving nothing is pure, but both their minds and their consciences are defiled. The circumcision party, of course, remember the circumcision party? Paul has to deal with this. They always sought to bind consciences with legalistic observances. And this is what I'm talking about here when I'm talking about that Judaistic flavor. If you will, look at Titus chapter 3, verse 9, for just another quick example of this. Paul says, avoid foolish controversies, genealogies, dissensions, quarrels about the law, for they are unprofitable and worthless. That language of the law is why I say, you know, this Gnosticism with genealogies and myths, if you will, have a Jewish flavor because this reference quarrels about the law. We'll talk more about that when we get in depth again. Remember, this is just a flyby. Now, let me say some more about this. The situation that Titus faced then at Crete was probably more complicated because the church there at Crete had been founded, you know, more recently than the church at Ephesus. And I would contend then it lacked probably a more solid organization, if you will. So the environment at Crete, the church environment at Crete, was also one of low morals. Imagine that. Sounds familiar? And then because of that, people are given to falsehood. I'm going to say that again. When you've got low morals going on or lack of morals, sounds like America, doesn't it? People are either given to falsehood, false teaching. Oh, well, that's America. But that's nothing new. It's nothing under the sun. So, for example, let's look at Titus chapter 1 again, just real quickly. I lost my place. Let me find it again. And I want to look at verses 12 through 13. So Titus chapter 1, verses 12 through 13. Paul says, one of the Cretans, a prophet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, lazy gluttons. This testimony is true. And then Paul says to Titus, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths. And this Jewish flavor of Gnosticism that I referred to earlier, here's another good example of that. Not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth. Now, again, my point is that when you live in an amoral or, how shall I say this, an antinomian society where you can just do whatever you want, well, people will believe anything. If you don't believe in anything, then you believe in anything. Well, We read about people from Crete. They're present at Pentecost. That's Acts chapter 2, verse 11. Check that out. It would seem that the message of Peter at that time might have fallen on deaf ears, and that the church was not founded at Crete until Paul and Titus preached there after Paul was released from his first Roman incarceration. Well, that's just a guess. You know, scholars guess that, and I'm just passing that along. That could very well have been the case. So, again, the point is, although you had people from Crete at Pentecost and they'd go back home, most likely the church wasn't founded until Paul and Titus preached at Crete. Now, okay, the immediate reason for writing this letter was probably the visit of Zenas and Apollos to Crete. Now, check this out. This is Titus chapter 3, and I know I'm running out of time. I only have a few minutes. Go to Titus chapter 3, verse 13, because Paul mentions these people. He says, "Do your best to speed Zenas, the lawyer, and Apollos on their way. See that they lack nothing. And let our people learn to devote themselves to good works so as to help cases of urgent need and not be unfruitful." So I'm contending that probably one of the immediate reasons why Paul writes his letter was because Zenas and Apollos are going to visit Crete. And Paul would realize that Titus and the church or the congregation at Crete, they need what? They need encouragement. They need exhortation. And so Titus's position was only temporary. I would contend Titus's position is temporary, and it's seen from the fact that Paul intended to send another worker to replace him so that Titus could come back and join Paul at Nicopolis. Check this out. Verse 12 of chapter 3, "When I send Artemas or Tychicus to you, do your best to come to me," he's talking to Titus, "at Nicopolis, for I've decided to spend the winter there." All right. So, boy, I'm running out of time. Got to do a few more things here. Hang on tight. Fasten your seatbelt. So Paul's purpose then in writing his letter to Titus, as in his first letter to Timothy, was, I would contend, there are two reasons. One, to give guidance about how you run things in the church, and then to warn against false teaching that troubles the church. So while the occasion and the content of Titus and 1 Timothy are similar, each describing the qualifications of bishops, there is a significant difference, and this I think this is where we'll stop for today. There's one significant difference, and let's just note this as flyby. And you'll know this because you know this from memory, but among the requirements for a bishop of Ephesus, Paul specifically states that he must not be a novice, which means a recent convert. That's 1 Timothy 3:6. Now, Paul deletes this demand when he writes to Titus in Titus 1, verses 7 through 9. Now, why would Paul delete that? Well, let's just answer it this way. Here's what I would contend. Since the church at Ephesus had existed for 5 to 8 years, Paul could include the qualification of experience for a bishop of the church at Ephesus. And so, by deleting that from his letter to Titus, that's another indication, or a further sign, if you will, that the Christian congregation hadn't taken hold at Crete, but only recently, and that almost all the Christians there were most likely recent converts. This goes back to what I said earlier, okay? That, you know, you had Cretans at Pentecost, but the church there probably wasn't established until Paul and Titus came and preached there. So in brief, or I guess in summary, and then we'll say goodbye. While both Timothy and Titus were to deal with similar false teachings, Titus would establish an order in the church founded only recently, whereas Timothy was to restore order in a Christian community that had been in existence for a little bit longer. So I hope that's helpful to you. We'll be back after the break.